Good morning, everybody. It's an exciting day. We're going to be unveiling part one of Caroline's How to Make Friends Toolkit. I am super excited for the toolkit. And as you're coming in, let me know in the chat who was able to join us yesterday and just one little aha that you took away yesterday. What we covered that phrase that we love, which is if they could, they would, which parents in our community love that phrase because it's just like one sentence. I think it's from Ross Green originally, who that it just shifts your mindset to, I'm not going to get frustrated and angry with my child for not doing these things. If they could, they would. We've got some lagging skills on board. And, how do we know if we have a problem or a puzzle to solve? I loved covering that yesterday. And if you were not able to join us and you need to catch the replay, Casey's going to go ahead and put that in the chat. And we've got different things coming up in the chat. She loved the bird's eye view, celebrating the little wins. And then there was the story we tell ourselves. A lot of us who have had social stressors, we have limiting beliefs, like coming into a room and thinking we'll be rejected or not accepted for some reason. So the stories we tell ourselves are very interesting. And then we dove into the social iceberg, which is Caroline's model, which I love. Based on Mona Delahook's model, and everyone that has this idea that on the surface we see these signals like hard to keep a friend, hard to make a friend. But if we go under the iceberg, we can go to the root cause, which is usually a lagging skill. And we talked about the eight principles of coaching your child. And I just want everybody to know here in Carolina, I think it'd be really great to speak a little bit before we dive in today about the kinds of letters and emails that you get from people and that truly every child represented here among all of you parents can make friends. I want to make that really clear. And then also finally yesterday we did cover some special considerations for autism and PDA. So Caroline, do you want to just set us up today and kind of what we were talking about a little bit yesterday with the long-term sort of feedback you're getting from this work?
Thank you. Yes. So, everybody, welcome. I'm so excited to work with you today, learn with you. I have been so fortunate to know so many kids and to also hear from so many people. And I hear from parents all over the world. And, sometimes even just one of these exercises can be a game changer. And one of the things I was thinking of when Debbie was introducing this is that I heard from a father who was saying that just social spy, which we're going to learn today, let alone all the other things that we are going to learn, helped change his son's mindset. Sometimes we don't think about these things, and so whatever you pay attention to grows. And so what we want to grow is this understanding of the social world and finding our way toward belonging. So I hear every day from people who are struggling, and I also hear from people who have grown and find success. And what I really want is for kids not to change themselves, but to find their choices and find their people. And I think this is totally possible for every single person. And sometimes it's just a matter of learning how. And that's why I'm here. So I'm really excited.
All right, fantastic. And for those of you who were not with us yesterday, Caroline McGuire is an ADHD coach. She was trained by Ned Hollowell, one of our heroes. And Caroline, now you're also one of our heroes. And she wrote the book, Why Will No One Play With Me, which is absolutely fabulous. So today we're going to dive into part one of Caroline's toolkit. And What I love so much about it is that it explicitly teaches things that I personally never thought to really teach kids, like the flavors of friendship. And that's where we're going to start. And Caroline, do you want to dive right in?
Yeah, I'm so excited. So I want to just say that the whole family can watch this. So if your child is in the room, no problem. And I would actually say to kids in the room that I know when I was a kid and the kids I work with, they don't want to be preached at, right? So my idea here is that you're going to learn and you're going to think. And everything we do that makes us more reflective, kind of makes us think a little more, makes us, look at the world and just understand it better, I think is like really great. And to the parents, I want to say that you are your child's original teacher. So as daunting as some of this stuff can feel, you know your child better than anyone. And if we were working together, I would be coming to you to say, what's the best way with your child's brain to help them? And flavors of friendship, I love. Now it's right in your workbook if you have the workbook open. And so I like to talk about friendship in general. I like to talk about the fact that we have different friends for different times. I have a really good friend, Scarlett Lewis, who founded the Choose Love movement, who always says, people kind of get on your bus and then people get off your bus. And sometimes when we've had hard experiences, we really want to hold on to everyone. But the thing is that you have different types of friends and you have different levels of trust with people. So trust grows, right? It doesn't happen overnight. And a lot of times, I know as a person with ADHD, I kind of sometimes give my trust away really fast. And when we're thinking about people and relationships and what we share and what we don't share and who we are with, and we want to grow our trust, grow our friendships, have shared experiences, but kind of know that we have different levels of friends and different kinds of friends, and that's okay. And I get it, we all want to grow some of our acquaintances into closer friends, but we also have people who are just buddies, and that's okay. So, in the flavors of friendship, the idea here is there's different friends, there's different flavors of friends. Do you have your intimate or your bestie? Now, I want to say this because there's a myth about close friends. You get, research shows, 2 to 3 close friends. People who understand you like a sister or brother your whole life. So we have this myth that everybody has to have a best friend, and I totally get it. We all want it, but I don't want people to feel badly if it doesn't happen in middle school or elementary school or something, because you need to feel that real like bond, that zing, that feeling where you're like, you too, I agree. So that's why I said yesterday, interest is the most important thing for those of us who are bright and quirky. Because to make a friend that close, we have to really zing with them. We have to really share experiences. And then there's people who are your friends, and these are people you see all the time. You either hang out with them or play with them. You know they're going to come to your birthday party, right? And then there are buddies, and these are like activity friends. Maybe you don't see them outside the activity. Maybe you're like, I really like this person and I want to grow the relationship. That's awesome. Maybe there's somebody who's like an on again, off again friend, right? But they're not going to come in a moment of crisis and, help you in the way that a friend would. And then there are acquaintances. And with acquaintances, they might be virtual friends. They might be friends who you don't really like know their last name, but you chat with them. You ask them for homework. Maybe you do have their information, but like you don't see them often. And again, maybe there's somebody you want to grow into more of a friend. And in that case, they're going to become more of a buddy, and then they're going to grow into a friend when you have shared experiences with them and you grow your trust and you grow your knowledge of them, right? So if you're trying to figure out who's who, what I always like to do is just think about, like, do you know their last name? You know, could you call them up in a crisis kind of thing? And then there's just people you say hello to. You know, you're friendly with them. And sometimes you don't even know their last name. Maybe you're like, oh, they changed shirts. I'm not sure if that's the same person, right? But they're just people that you're friendly with. Now, why is this important? The reason I'm talking about this is I think we need to talk about friendship in general, and I think it shouldn't be a taboo subject. And I think it's okay when we're looking at friendship dilemmas too, to think about, well, how good a friend is this person? That's where I always start. I'm always like, well, tell me the story. And then, like, how good a friend is this person? And what's your history of trust with them? Right? And that helps a lot because sometimes you're like, you know, I don't have a great history with them. I can't really trust them, or they don't know stuff about me. And that to me also de-escalates things. Like, okay, wait, I'm expecting a lot of this person. Maybe I shouldn't, right? Or conversely, no, we're talking about a friend and I expected more, right? So all this friendship talk to me, I would love it if it's just part of your daily life, part of talking about things. Talk about your family, talk about the way that you do things and your parents' way of doing things. Parents, if you're a wallflower or if you struggle, please talk about it because those struggles can really help illuminate the conversation. So that's flavors of friendship.
All right, I want to dig into this a little bit, Caroline. What I hear you saying is that our expectations should differ based on the flavor of friend.
Yes,
That is
100%.
huge. And it reminds me of something Brené Brown said. I probably won't be quoting her, you know, exactly, but to be vulnerable and share your sort of deepest secrets or your dreams, someone has to earn the right to hear your important stuff. So we're talking about good friend, bestie for that sort of level of sharing, right?
Absolutely. Not only because oversharing makes you a little vulnerable, especially in the teen years, right? Because now somebody has information and maybe they're not going to do the best stuff with it. But also because one of the things that happens with a lot of the kids I work with is, and I totally was like this when I was young, we want friends so badly that we don't stop and think, does this person deserve me? Do I want to be friends with this person? Is this person somebody who is a good friend? And when we get to social spy, I'm gonna say to all of you, go back to school and spy and see who treats people well and who is a good friend. If they don't, I mean, I don't know why they'd be a candidate to be your friend.
That's huge. That's huge. I'm sorry to ask you, sometimes, and I think this happened with you and me, at least from my perspective. There's like an instant click. It's like we speak each other's language, we're interested in the same things. And I think that's why we tell people so often, pursue your interests because you'll maybe find a quicker click. How do we explain this just like when the chemistry is there, when the click is there?
You know, I think there's two things about the click. I think as neurodivergent people, we love the click. So, because the click is interesting, it's sparkly, right? I think interest is so key. And so sometimes I think you do click, right? Here's the one thing I want to say that I found out from talking, because I'm one of those people, like, if I'm at the picnic tables watching my kids swim, and somebody starts talking about this stuff, I'm like, oh, so tell me, what do you feel as like a neurotypical person, as you know, like I'm into it. And one of the things people have told me is even if they click and they really like someone, they still expect in some cases to go through the stages of building the relationship. So don't be offended if you click and you have a great time and you have a bus ride where you chat, like, or like Debbie and I right away. You still sometimes then have to spend time together, build the relationship. The click has been there and it might come every single time. And I am so happy for you if it does. But don't be offended if the person isn't instantly like, hey, spend every minute with me, be right by my side. Because sometimes people need to still build the relationship, but they're interested. You know, it clicked.
Wonderful, wonderful. And you might be covering this later today, but the question that's bubbling up for me is that when I have an acquaintance, it feels like an act of bravery to say, hey, do you want to, talking in kids' terms, do you want to come over and, play video games together? Or, we're going to the beach. Do you want to join us? Like, it's sort of a scary because someone could say no. How do you, sort of coach people on if you want to bring a relationship to the next flavor.
So there's a couple things, and I have this in Why Will No One Play With Me, signs that someone wants to move from like an acquaintance to a friend. So you look for those signs, and they're things like they talk longer to you, they always seek you out, you know, they sit next to you. And then it does feel scary, and I call that a next step. And what I like to do is I like to make the next step. Okay, so here's a funny, you know, thing that some kid told me that they were like, I'm not doing this, but I thought of this, right? You zing with someone, you both love Taylor Swift, and you're like, my next step is to ask them to go to the, you know, Taylor Swift movie thing they had. That's a big next step, right? How about like a smaller next step, right? So I think be ready with a next step, pursue a next step. Who knows? You might say, hey, do you want to go listen to Taylor Swift? And they might be like, I'll do you better. Let's go to the movie. Wonderful. Like you're like, yay. But having some next steps, I think, is the way to do that. And I think that if you make it a smaller next step, right, then you don't have to be as brave. Like, hey, do you want to go to the library right now? Do you want to go walk outside? Do you want to, you know, do you want to play video games online, right, before you play in person? Like something that allows you to continue, but it's not like, do you want to go on a, you know, a cruise together?
Just thinking, so we did our first interview. We really clicked. And then I think I emailed you and said, I'm going to be in Boston. Do you want to have dinner? And you said, yes. So that was our next step.
That was our next step. And I told you I never ever get out of my office and get to go to dinner. So I was super excited. And I think we'd spoken a couple times by then too.
Yeah, that's
I
true.
think we'd had a few Zoom meetings.
That's right. That's right. And I'm seeing in the chat, people are craving like a script, especially for if we're explaining this concept to like a 5 to 7 year old or a neurodivergent teen. How would you, if you were talking to your child in sort of like the most simple terms, what would you say about this?
So for the little ones, I would say I would give them, you know, something to say. I would give them a little script, like, you know, how about we, you know, get together? How about we have a play date? How about if we ask our parents to go to the playground together, right? And a lot of times what's easier about the littles is we get to be involved as parents. And then with older kids, I absolutely would give them a script. I often help kids write text messages, help them with a DM, help them script things out. Sometimes I'll say something and they're like, no, not that at all. But now that you said that, it reminds me of what I really want to say. Sometimes just having that foil of someone else. But I absolutely would have them say, like, hey, you want to, you know, want to go hang out on the third floor of the school together? Do you want to, you know, do you want to, like, I know one kid I worked with recently, like the track coach makes them run on days they're not doing track or whatever. Hey, like you want to meet up and be tortured and run together. Like to have something that's like they were going to do it anyway, but now you're like their partner in it is also a great next step.
Yeah.
And so I definitely would help kids script it out. And role play, that always works really well.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. And I'm seeing in the chat also that, teens who've been rejected before find this really scary. And what I would say to that is just slice it thinner. Maybe you're not asking them to go to the Taylor Swift movie. Maybe you send them a funny meme and you start with something on social media or text. Like, slice it as thin as you can. And in the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab, which we're going to talk about later, our parent learning community, we talk a lot about 1% gains, which means progress comes in very tiny steps. So it's okay to make the next step as tiny as possible so that our brain doesn't go into freak out mode, because then it's hard to get anything done. All right, let's go into impressions you create in the world. I'm very excited about this tool.
Okay, so what I would say to the kids listening is everybody shows up in a different way and everybody leaves behind an impression. Like everybody makes an impression wherever you go. And it's sometimes something you think about, sometimes something you don't think about. And I have this picture in the Bright and Quirky book, and it's of a dino in the rock. And just like the dinosaur left their impression behind, and we all love it, everyone leaves an impression behind. And you make it with your tone of voice and your body language and your actions. And all that I'm doing with this exercise is helping us just think about what makes an impression. So a lot of times I ask kids to think about celebrities or people that they know and like, what impression do they make? And maybe you're immediately thinking of a family member or someone you know, and that they make a good impression or that they make an impression at all. And then I would say, like, what goes into making a good impression? Like, if you think about a celebrity or someone you know, and what makes you feel positive about them? And it doesn't have to be, anything too specific, right? Sometimes you just get a feeling, right? They make you feel warm. They make you feel heard, right? And then I'd say from the flip side, and I always say, think of family members, think of people you know, maybe that you all are driving in the car and you have a little kibitz about this, right? What goes into making kind of a negative or bad impression? Like think of people you know where they don't make the best impression. And I always say, again, parents, you're with your kid all the time, like driving in the car, thinking about this, chatting about this. You know, you go to the supermarket, something happens, you get back in the car, and you're like, wow, that wasn't the best impression, right? And then the last piece is, what impression do you want to make? And that's really your own choice. And I love people to just think about it. And it's very much a thinking exercise. And are there people who you admire who make an impression? And maybe you're like, I would like to make an impression like that.
Let
Because
me
just
ask
like,
you, Caroline, if
yeah,
I
go ahead.
can,
Yeah.
just to take it from the abstract, what would be on your list of what makes a bad impression, and then on your list of what makes a good impression, just as some examples?
Like a bad impression to me would be, you know, when I'm in a store and someone shouts at the clerk or the workers, you know, then I have a bad impression of them. Like, I don't know why you need to yell at people. I don't think it's necessary. Or if I'm really friendly to someone and they don't respond back to me, I wouldn't say it's a bad impression, but I'm not going to remember them in the same way that I would if they just acknowledge me or say something back, you know? I think tone of voice can make an impression. So I think it's really all about, you know, some people don't really think about their impression, and I think it's good to just start thinking about what impression do you want to make?
And just a note to parents, I love that you gave that example of asking someone something and they don't respond. Because I think a number of our Bright and Quirky kids do that and don't necessarily realize that it leaves an unfavorable impression. So we might explicitly say to them, "Hey, buddy, you might tell somebody, let me think about that." Or, "I heard you, but I'm thinking about it." I had a colleague who said, "I need a little think time," which I use all the time now. So just like these little social graces, like it's totally, especially for our kids with slower processing speed, it's totally fine if you need an extra beat to cue your listener. My wheels are turning. Give me a minute. And then what, in your mind leaves a good impression?
I think a good impression is made rather when you try to think about the other person, you know? And I don't mean by that people pleasing, but just trying to smile at them, show them that you're listening, you know? I don't, it's like, for instance, the not speaking, I don't think it leaves a bad impression if you even just go, "Oh, yeah." You know, I don't think you have to say tons, but just to allow them to know that you are actually listening to them and in sync with them. I think that makes a good impression, or even just a neutral impression.
Absolutely. And just so you guys know, we have more tools for you on Thursday. We're going to be talking about the rhythm of conversation, because conversation is really like a tennis game where you serve and return and return and return. So we're going to have a tool, I think it's called Build on That, on Thursday. But they're all weaving together now so that the tools support each other. So that's exciting. All right, anything
Yay.
more to say about leave an impression, leave a favorable impression?
No, it's really meant to be a thinking exercise. And sometimes when I do this with kids, they don't really say a lot, but then they'll come back to it. You know, even 6 months from now, they'll be like, "Hey, remember we talked about that impression thing? Like, here's something I'm thinking." And it just turns us all into awareness that, you know, people see our actions and then they think about what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the perfect lead up to the next tool, which is social spy, because we're using the terms good and bad impression. And I think we could also interpret those into an impression that makes a friend sort of like a magnet want to draw closer, or make a friend want to go further. And let's unpack that with social spy.
Yeah, so social spy is one of my favorite things and it's super useful. And so I wanted to teach it to you and then I'll be referring to it all week. So I want to turn first to the kids in the room. So I don't know about you, but I am not always the best noticer. My brain goes really fast. A lot of information comes into my brain. Sometimes I'm paying attention to something else and not what people are doing. And I sometimes miss stuff. And so I don't know if any of you are like that, but a lot of my clients, they miss stuff and there's lots of social information going on in the world. We talked about, does someone want to move from a buddy or acquaintance to a friend? There's signs, there's ways that people show you. A lot of my clients miss like an overture someone's making. Like they're interested maybe in being your friend, but we kind of miss it. And then, you know, teachers and in school, there's lots of ways that they show us information or show us how they feel that it's nonverbal, right? And I know that this is hard for some of us, and that's why I invented Spy. So when you are a social spy, you are watching people subtly. This isn't like leering or hovering or directly staring at someone. This is where you just kind of listen. It's people watching with intention, I like to say. So you listen or you kind of scan and observe a specific person and just, you know, look and then come back. It's not leering or hovering or kind of staring at them. And you're watching for something specific. So you could pretend to be at your locker. You could pretend to read your phone. You don't have to be staring at them. It's just a quick glance. You're at your locker, you can listen, right? You don't have to even look. And the idea is to gather information for something specific. So you have a specific mission. You're not just staring at everything in general. You're looking to find out, does that person seem like they want to take a next step with me? Does my teacher seem like they're getting annoyed? Is this a good time to ask for an extension? Should I wait? Right? So every time you spy, you're not just scanning, you're looking for something specific. And you're going to practice. So for anyone who's getting nervous, you're going to practice. Maybe you go someplace, parent and child, and you rehearse. I love food courts. I love malls. I love box stores. And this is all in Why Will No One Play With Me, but you can practice and rehearse watching people with intention so that you don't get caught. And by the way, over the years, I have never had anyone get caught.
Now, we wouldn't explicitly say, hey, I'm spying on you, blah, blah, blah. It would just keep the exercise to ourselves, right?
Right. So with little ones or kids that you're worried, like, oh, they might tell someone, I just explained to them, like, we're not going to tell anyone we're spying because it's just people watching and we're not going to share with people things we notice. You're just going to share it with me or mom and dad. And we're trying to find something out, right? So that's why I've never had anyone get caught because I practice with them. And I kind of also, if you're worried and your kid is someone who might, overshare and you're like, oh no, I don't want them to share, I just explain to them that it might make people feel a little strange if they know that I'm watching them. So we're just not going to share that. And truthfully, most kids look at me and they're like, yeah, of course. They know.
Right,
But it's good to
depending on our
explain.
depending on our degree of awareness.
Right. And that's why I always say, if you're worried, practice longer, right? If you're worried, just make the practice and the role play go on for a longer period of time. Don't just do it once, right? Or maybe they don't spy at school. Maybe they spy only with you. But it can be a really useful tool in order to find out information we need to know about people, right? And what are they interested in? What do they like to chat about? That kind of information sometimes we really need to solve social dilemmas. And so spy can help you get to know someone and it can help you know more about someone.
You know what I love about this, Caroline, is that we really can take into account here gender and culture. I remember coming out from the East Coast. I was pretty type A, and Seattle's like a pretty, well, at least at that time, was a pretty type B place. I remember I just had to chillax a little bit. And then I've talked to my husband about, hey, do you talk about relationship stuff with your guy friends? He's like, guy friends don't talk about that. Or I'd talk to my sons about, they were very tender-hearted and sensitive, but on the playground, they came with a little bit of a different persona, a little bit of a like a teasing tough guy persona. So, what you observe could be different based on gender, based on culture, and what you observed in Seattle might be different in New York versus Singapore or versus Paris. I know we have an international crowd here. So this is a really handy tool. And I remember I lived in Japan for a year and they, you shower off with soap first and then the whole family uses the same bath water because they're clean already. And they're like, oh, the foreigners bring the soap into the bath, but we don't do that in Japan. So super useful tool. Super useful. Love it.
Yeah, I think it's really it's good to know too if you're not a great noticer, if you do miss stuff, because then when you go somewhere new, for instance, whether it's Japan or whether it's a new classroom, you can say, okay, I am a person who doesn't always notice things. I want to spy and just find out what Debbie's referring to are the unspoken rules, the things that aren't always written down. And I know last year I went to England, and that's one of the things I did, because the sidewalks and the way you navigate sidewalks, totally different than Boston, where I am. So, you want to figure it out. And if you do a quick spy exercise, it really can help. And then you, parent and child, can also debrief about this stuff. So maybe the kid's gone to school, they spy, you spy at school, and then you come back and you're like, here's the information I got. And then you talk about it.
All right, let's cover the last tool, which is for today, which is reading the room. We're going to go in depth quite a bit. Then we're going to have some Q&A. So start prepping your questions. All right, take
Okay.
it away, Caroline. Yeah.
So in your book, in your Bright and Quirky book is a graphic about reading the room. And so you can take this away from me with you, and you can practice. So what do I mean by reading the room? People always say, like, did you read the room, or you need to read the room? And it's sometimes kind of like, what are you talking about? So what I mean is to scan a situation and think about what's going on, who's there, and sort of the verbal and nonverbal cues that are happening. What's happening in the situation, right? Are two people maybe arguing? Is there a really formal situation going on and people are super dressed up? And then we touched on those unspoken rules when we were talking about Debbie's journeys. And when you think about reading the room, one of the things we're trying to uncover is, in this environment, what are the unspoken rules? What are the things that aren't written down, but they kind of help us all figure out what to do and what choices to make? So one of the things I love to do is to go and people watch and spy and just be a fly on the wall and watch different situations. And I love to partner with kids, and I love it when parents do this, and they do this all the time, and take this information I'm about to give you and go and read different rooms together. Right? When you're at a family party, if you're out to dinner, right? You can watch people go to a food court and just look at people and try to figure out what's going on. It's super fun. So the very first step of reading the room here on your graphic is to pause and spy and observe. Now, here's what I want to tell you. Every single person I have ever worked with, or who I've ever taught this to, has said to me, oh my gosh, if I scan the room and take two beats and see what's going on, someone's going to notice and they're going to think, what are you doing? And so here's what I want to say to you. If you do nothing else, go someplace you feel safe and take those two beats. And I always say, when you're scanning, you're kind of like a lifeguard. You're like, doot, 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 doot. What's going on in this situation? It's two beats. I promise you, people are in their own little world. They are not even going to notice. But what we often do, and I'm just going to say myself, you, of course, don't do this. I tend to rush into situations. I don't notice. I don't think. And I don't notice everything that's happening. And then I get myself into a kettle of fish. So taking those two beets is really important.
Love it.
Then one of the things we do in our brain as human beings that you may not even be aware of is we think about what is similar and different to a situation we've been in before. Like your brain automatically does this. It's part of executive function, the management system of the brain. I call it like this, not that. So when you scan and you're in a situation, you're trying to read the room, one of the things you can think of is, have I been here before? Is this similar to something that I've done or different than something that I've done before? And that'll help you hone in on, okay, this is similar. And in that situation, right, here's what was going on, and here's the stuff I had to remember. And then I have a little phrase for everybody as step three. My Nana used to say, mind your P's and Q's. And that was her way of reminding us to pause and to read the room. And so when I was inventing the read the room exercises, I really wanted all the lessons in Why Will No One Play With Me to show step by step how to learn to read the room. So they're all there for you all to do together. And I was trying to think of something people can think, because in that situation, you're trying to think of so many things. And so I thought a little rhyme would help you. So P's and Q's stands for the people, the environment, the actions, the similarities, and then the cues, the social cues. So when you're in a situation, you're going to notice what's happening in the people, the environment, the actions, and then like what's similar, and then any cues. And that way, even if you get into the situation and you're like, oh my God, what did that lady talk about? I can't remember. Just think, mind your P's and Q's.
Great. I love little devices like that.
And as you're doing this, you're going to decode those unspoken rules, right? So unspoken rules are, what are the things that nobody talks about, or maybe they don't talk about them enough? Like, do you take off your shoes in the house, or do you leave your shoes on? And every culture and every environment has different unspoken rules, which is sort of a lot, right? But once you get to know them, then you have them. You're locked in, right? So again, that's where taking those two beats, right? When you enter someone's front door, you actually are reading the room, because you're going to look and you're going to take two beats and see, did they take their shoes off? And most of the time, people don't have anything posted. It's just unspoken, right? Teachers, when we're young, post the rules, right? But then at some point, they stop posting them. And so we have to figure out, well, what does that person expect in their classroom? And you can watch people and see how they react. Does the teacher allow you to just get up and go to the bathroom? Or when someone asks, what do they tell you to do? Those are like the unspoken rules. Sometimes they're very explicit and they say, but sometimes they don't. And then we want to think about, and this is a higher skill. So I'd say get the rest of this down, right? And then we're going to start to think about mood and taking the room's temperature and how are people feeling. And I have a lot of exercises in Why Will No One Play With Me about reading the mood and being able to just start to learn and observe, like, what's the facial expression your teacher makes when they're grumpy? What's the facial expression they make when they're like, okay, and they're chill? And so this is, again, this is like as you're learning to read the room and you're getting better and better and better at it. And by the way, no one does this 100% of the time. So that's not what I'm expecting. And everybody practices it. Some days it goes better, some days it goes worse. And then tomorrow we get up and we try again. And then Sometimes one of the things to do when you're thinking about the people is to step into their shoes and think about and take their perspective. How are they feeling? So here's an example. You walk into the room, take your two beats, you scan, and you realize that two people are fighting and their heads are together and they're arguing. Stepping into their shoes, maybe they don't want to talk right now. Maybe they don't want you to interrupt them, right? So again, as you get better at reading the room, you're going to start to think about, okay, who's here? And let me step into their shoes. What is it that they need? What is it that they expect? And then we're going to go back to my last favorite skill, which is taking that bird's eye view, right? And taking that big picture view of things. And this might be that you are already in the situation, you're sitting down, and then you start to think, how do I want to be in the future, right? In this situation, what results do I want? What's going on here? What do I know about these people in the past? And how can I use that information? And again, this is a higher level reading the room skill. So this is at the very end of all the chapter about this and why will no one play with me. And it's something to work on once you're better at the other stuff. But it is true when you read the room, you kind of do take a bird's eye view. And so what I would say is start small, start practicing to scan and notice what's going on in the situation. That's like the first place to start reading the room.
People are wanting a little bit more of maybe like an example, like, and it's really interesting. I had a friend who was raising an autistic boy, and she would almost become the narrator. She was actually also a preschool teacher for all kinds of minds. And she would say something like, and this is what parents can do too, like, we were at their pool club in the summer, and she said, those kids just ran to the picnic table to all eat their lunches together. If you want to join them, you can also go to the picnic table and ask, can I join you? So, what some kids might just naturally do or question, he was narrating the experience. Or we come into preschool, and let me do an older kid thing. We go to the first day of soccer practice, and some kids are already kicking a ball around. You could say, oh, look, some people are kicking the ball around, waiting for practice to start. You could go do that too. So, am I on the right track, Caroline, here with narrating, or what are some examples of how to do this in real life?
Okay, so I love this. Thank you for prompting me, Debbie. I love narrating. So when I do this with kids, when I work with kids, teens, young adults, adults even, and I teach them to read the room, I narrate. We go somewhere and we watch people, and I narrate out loud my thoughts and what's going on. And so a great way to start this is as parents to narrate and also to collaborate. Both you and your child on what are you noticing, right? So when the kids go over to the picnic bench to eat lunch, is it every kid? Is it just certain kids? Do they run? Do they walk? Right? To narrate that out loud. And the soccer example prompted something for me. One of the kids I made a video with was very, very funny to me, and he was a middle schooler, and he said to me that in the UK, you do not automatically get to wear the what he called football soccer uniform. You have to earn it. And I said, how do you know that? And he basically walked me through watching the other kids and noticing that very few kids had on this uniform, and then inquiring about it and hearing like there's a whole process. You don't just get this uniform, evidently. And so I think as a parent, you could narrate that. And as a kid, you could observe that. And then one of the skills I think that's really important on reading the room that's sort of unspoken is you're investigating, right? I'm taking this information and then I'm going, what's going on here? And that's sort of like unspoken, but I think it's really important is to investigate, like, what's going on here and what does this information tell me? Does that help, Debbie?
I love that. And Jim put in the chat, when our autistic kids were younger, when we were watching movies, we used to ask them what they thought the characters were feeling, what their facial expressions meant, what was going on in the scene, what wasn't spoken. I guess we were kind of doing low risk read the room experiments. Love that.
I also would say TV and movies are a great way to expand our reading of social cues and our reading of the room, right? All the different things that go on in a show, there are characters who don't read the room, right? And you can have discussions about that and just say, hey, do you notice so and so doesn't read the room? And then there are people's facial expressions. I love that. I always ask kids and my kids, what is that person feeling? What do you think? Go to a family party, go someplace where it's like low risk and, go enter with intention and say, hey, we're going to scan and observe and then we're going to chat about it after, right? And like
Yes.
chat about what they are seeing in real time.
Okay, you guys, I just have to tell you, I was sick last weekend. I was horizontal on the couch all weekend, and I found on Netflix this show called Anne with an E. I don't know if you've seen it. It's about Anne of Green Gables. Great. Anne of Green Ga Gables. Yeah, Gables. She is basically a bright and quirky kid who struggles with reading the room, and she's got a whole traumatic past, and but that'd be a very interesting family show. Okay, we're going to move into Q&A. Anne with an E. Casey, maybe you can put that in the chat. We're going to move into Q&A. So go ahead and raise your digital hand if you have a question. And we have a $25 Starbucks card to the person who'll pick at random. Please put in the chat. Big aha moment from today. It could be from any of the tools, flavors of friendship, depression, social spy, or reading the room. Just go ahead and give us an aha moment, especially one that you can share with your child today. And more than just naming the tool, what is actually the aha that you had? And I want to take a moment. This is my little PBS break moment. To let you know why we're able to offer Friendship Week at such a low cost. And that's because this event is sponsored by the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab. And what we're doing this week is really a sample of what we do in the Idea Lab, which is our parent learning community. So this week we're focusing on thriving beyond social struggles. We also work with school and learning challenges. As you know, bright and quirky kids who need to be accelerated in the areas where they excel and supported in the areas where they're challenged. That's a very niche specific thing to know how to do and know how to advocate for your child at school. So we help parents with that. Also, helping their kids with emotional regulation and challenging behaviors, executive function, anxiety, stress, and worry, and screen overuse. And all of the talks like this I've ever done are in our video library. We have over 300 of them. We have workshops every month, coffee sessions similar to this where we're having discussions. And I want to show you something about that really quick. And if you'd like to upgrade to the Idea Lab, and Casey will put the link in the chat. Today only, you will win one of Caroline's books. We will send you at no charge a copy of Why Will No One Play With Me that describes all these exercises. So we'll put that in the mail to you. The link is brightandquirky.com/friendship-week-ty. It's a little bit long, but that's the link. And Casey's going to share a really quick 3-minute video, and then we'll go into Q&A. And this is our members and what they have to say about the Bright and Quirky Idea Lab.
I spent a dozen years trying to figure out what to do with my kid, and basically nobody really knew. I knew I had an amazingly bright kid, and I knew there were many, many challenges.
Casey. Be a mouse in the wrong spot.
I didn't know what 2E was. So that was step one for us, was discovering the label for what our son was, because we knew he was smart and we knew he had challenges, but we didn't really know what that was called and that there were other kids with the same kind of pattern of skills and challenges as he has.
I think having that different lens has really helped me to be a better mom.
Brighton Quirky was kind of like the intervention we needed because we just didn't have the knowledge, the skills, the confidence.
There's just so much good advice. You get all your questions plus more answered.
I always have moms here that have kids just like mine, and it's normal.
Suddenly, all kinds of light bulb moments happen. I recognize so much of our son, his behaviors, his challenges, and what other people were saying.
The right message is constantly being relayed to us on a weekly basis. We can go in and take what we need at times we need it.
Such a warm and compassionate group of people. It's really nice to have people that get it and that are there for you.
It's very easy. You know, you go on your own time when you want to go in and catch up on things that are happening. The monthly interviews with various experts in the field, I think those are priceless.
It's so nice to have a group of other parents that are going through what you're going through. We're all kind of here for each other.
I wish I could go back 7 or 8 years and do everything different, and I wonder what life would be if I knew all this stuff.
I would say it's totally worth it. He is the same kid, but so much happier. You will find so many ideas on how to make your child succeed in their educational journey and in their life journey. It's been invaluable to us.
There's all these different journeys you're on, and you're moving a little bit and a little bit, and then they start supporting each other. The 1% gains, all of a sudden, you turn around and you say, my life's completely different, and it's been happening almost invisibly.
Just have to say thank you, because you were a lifeline when no one understood what I was going through. My children have blossomed.
It's way exceeded my expectations.
It's been a game changer for us.
Yay! We love our members. Okay, guys, so if you're enjoying this week and you want to upgrade to membership, please join us. We do this every week, having experts, Q&A, conversations, and Casey's going to put that link in one more time. And let's see, for our Starbucks gift card today, we had Amber. Let me find it again. Where's Amber's? Casey, let me know if you can find it. Where was Amber's? Okay, Amber, you get the card. I can't read it at the moment, but please private message Casey your email address. We might have number of Ambers, I'm not sure. And let's go ahead and go into Q&A. And one more time, the bonus for today only is you get a copy of Caroline's book, Why Will No One Play With Me? All right, Erin, love to hear from you.
Hi. I know we touched on it a little bit just at the very beginning yesterday and today, but in the how do you know if you have a problem question, I think, Debbie, you've talked in Idea Lab about, you know, a lot of these kids need a lot of downtime and refresh time. So how can we identify, like, do we have a problem? Like, say there are the skills, but maybe it takes so much effort, or maybe the other things throughout the day or week are taking effort. So how can we gauge, like, if our kids are saying like they're not up for it, say they have the skills, but they are just not really, don't feel like they have the bandwidth to go out there and really make social connections perhaps outside of school?
That's such a good question, Erin. I'd love to get Caroline's take on it. And in our, I forgot to mention, our members are meeting at 11:30 every day after these sessions. And in yesterday's session, we were talking about spoons of energy. And let's say you wake up with 20 spoons of or 10 spoons of energy, and by the time you're home from school, you feel like you have half a spoon left. I think that's such a great question. And, you know, I'm not sure the age of the child. How old is your child?
10.
Okay. So I'd say, buddy, you know, making friends is kind of like eating vegetables. Having at least one friend and a spare is kind of like eating vegetables. So it's really good for us. And let's think about, and you want to have this conversation at a time where there's lots of energy, maybe on a Saturday or Sunday morning. You know, I want to have a collaborative conversation with you and just brainstorm some ways that wouldn't look like that much work. You know, let's think about interests that you enjoy talking about. What are some clubs at school or some classes we might take to find kids who have similar interests? I'm willing to make the call. I'm willing to set up the class. And we talk in the Idea Lab all the time about being self-scientists and running experiments. And what's one tiny experiment we can agree with? Caroline, what else would you add?
You know, one of the things I always do with bright and quirky kids is have that conversation and then brainstorm also, what are days of the week that are just too much? You know, what are days of the week where you have more spoons? So, you know, is there something we could do to give you more spoons, to give you more energy, right? So I'll just give a personal example. I always talk about things in a really collaborative way, and there's no judgment. And I try to push away the, you know, everyone else's kid is packing their backpack kind of thing, because if that is taking tons of their energy, and that means that they have nothing left, maybe if I pack their backpack, then they have the energy to go to a Lego club or go somewhere after school. Some kids really need a break after school. Some kids really do struggle with, like, I can't go from school to being social. And in that case, maybe it's Saturday. And what I like to do is just have that collaborative conversation and then also brainstorm and then also say, like, you know, friendship's pretty important. It's something, you know, we've talked about that you want. And so, you know, where could we flex? Where could we stretch? And, you know, what's something that would be fun for you and wouldn't be draining? And I always validate the fact that school is super draining for them, right? I don't try to talk them out of that because it is draining for them. And they've had to be reading cues all day and they've had to be on all day. And so I do want to find those opportunities. I don't want to just say, no, let's not do it, but I want to find those opportunities collaboratively. And there are times when I do say, we have to pick, right? Like, we have to pick. So of this buffet of options I'm offering you, what do you want to do? Because we have to have balance. And sometimes that means we exercise and we move our body. And sometimes that means that we also do something for friendship. And that's why I like to talk about friendship in general. Friendship is built. It means we have to see each other. It means we have to do things with people. And so I try to have those conversations so that it's part of, like, the fabric of their life. So what I'm thrilled about is that this kid's 10, because if we start doing this early, then it just becomes part of their lives. And if it's later, don't panic. It can still become part of the choices we're making. But I want to make it collaborative. I think Debbie's 100% on with that.
Awesome. And I just want to say also, another theme that came up yesterday was asking kids the yes, no question, do you want to do X, Y, Z? And I was able to interview one of our teens, one of the kids of our members, I'm not going to say your name. You're here, but I'm not going to say your name just because of privacy. But I learned so much from her son. And he went to a summer camp, and he had been pretty isolated before that by choice. And he said, I forgot how cool it was to be around other people and to make friends. So I think that's where we want to kind of avoid yes, no questions. Like Caroline's saying, like, here's some options, pick one instead of just yes, no, because they forget how valuable they can be. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. You bet. You bet. Jennifer, you're up next.
My question's about the impressions discussion with your child. Do you suggest behaviors that might put people off if they're not bringing them up or noticing their own behaviors that might be putting off other people, like bubble space or info dumping or not reciprocating conversation, not giving the other person a chance to talk?
Good question.
Yeah, Jennifer, in While No One Play With Me, there's a list right after impressions of behaviors that might alienate people. And I think all of those are on the list. And what I do, though, just because this is an exercise that works really well when a kid is not into the idea of friendship, right? Or they're like, I'm good, thanks very much. So one of the things I want to do is not take away its power. And part of its power is it's non-threatening. So the way I bring this up, Jennifer, just to role play it out for you, is that I don't say you, I say, like, think about Uncle Bob. Like, he constantly interrupts. Does that make a good impression? Or like, what do you think about when people are space invaders and they invade your space? But I would pepper in other things that are not your kid, so they're not like, Mom, you're talking about me. And I would also make it not about them, because the power of this exercise is that it's not about us in a gotcha way. And I'm not saying you would ever do this, Jennifer, but it's about us in a holistic, let's think about who we want to be way. And I think we can bring those behaviors up, but we don't have to do it in a gotcha way. We can do it in a, like, what happens and how do people feel and what kind of impression does that make? And that's why I use celebrities and stuff a lot. And I'm like, what about this person? What about, you know, how they were shouting at someone, you know, on the Tonight Show, and it was all over, you know, the news. And so that way it's churning them, it's helping them to think, but I'm not making it about them. But I would pepper it in, and the list is there. And I also am very careful how much I bring up specifics about them. I would make sure there's a balance.
You know, Caroline, I just have to share a quick story. I love that so much, and I love your brilliance. I had a client once. He was like C-suite of a Fortune, I don't know, 500 company, autistic. And I was telling him a story how people, I had like, I don't know, a 12-year-old client, and the mother had relayed to me that they were at the shopping mall and saw some friends, and people were like, hey, Jake, how are you? And he was just sort of like, hey, hey. And I then explained to him that when people ask how you are, answer the question and then ask how they are, as sort of like the way to build on it. And I kid you not, I saw this C-suite guy for years. And anytime I asked him, how are you? He then asked, how am I? Which is kind of lovely as a therapist for your client to ask, how are you? Because you know, no clients ask me that, but it was such a lovely thing. And so that just reminds me of it. Okay, let's go to Amanda. Love to hear from you.
Hey. I have actually a two-part question.
Okay.
So I am hypervigilant. I am very good at reading the room, but I am too good at reading the room. And I do not want to pass that on to my children. And so I find it hard sometimes to find the middle ground between what I see in a room and what I want them to see in a room that's more normal, and not to be like so overwhelming for what they should be able to see, because I'm not actually sure what a more reasonable look is.
Yep.
Can you say Does more about sense? The downside? Just because it sounds like a superpower. What am I missing?
Yeah, so I always ask my therapist how she is. But I get focused on how everybody else is, and I get hung up on the little things, and I'm worried all the time. Like, I see cues that aren't necessarily there, or they're there, but they're at such a subclinical level that, like, somebody scuffed their shoe this morning. I'm like, oh my God, I think they might be angry. But really, they're just like, they've had like the tiniest little thing.
Well, the meaning that we give it.
Yes. Yeah, so I give it a way higher. I overread. Gotcha. Like, my radar is too sensitive, and then it makes it hard to just relax. And I don't want to, like, I have a child with a lot of anxiety that also can be a bit that way, but also not always good at reading the room. And so I'm not sure how to like thread that needle for him.
Got it. Thank you for clarifying.
And then kind of related. Can I put the second part in too? And then you, because I think you might answer them together.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so the second part is how you find the middle ground between helping them fit in a healthy way and changing who they are to be what everyone else wants them. Like, and I think it's probably related to that hypervigilance.
It is.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm with you, Jennifer. Amanda, sorry. I will say that I want to talk about hypervigilance on two levels, because I think that this is really profound for our whole community. One, there are kids who become so fixated when they don't read cues on trying to be hypervigilant. And then, you know, they're like, I can't do it anymore. And they give it up completely. So whenever we're teaching these skills, I want to let kids know that they can turn it on if they need to turn it off. Let's pick environments where it's, you know, low cost, doesn't matter, right? Let's give them time to replenish their spoons. Second, I want to speak to what Amanda has said, because there's probably more than just the Amandas of the world out there. So I want to tell you, Amanda, that's actually how I am. I do miss stuff sometimes. I'm not going to claim I don't, but I usually miss stuff because my internal world is so overpowering to me. And a teacher once said this about my own daughter. She said, it's too much information for a little person. And it was like, she's reading the room so well, and then you're attaching all this meaning to it. It's very bombarding. What I want to do first is I want to step back, and I want to find out what your child actually experiences in a really casual, chatty way, having one of those conversations with them. I'm going to do a Debbie and just say, hey, buddy, like, when you're in a situation, how much information do you notice? And I want to just start finding out, because sometimes we have kids who are nothing like us, and this is not an issue. And then sometimes we have a little clone of ourselves. I also want to say that many anxious kids, this is the kind of thing that's the source. So one of my favorite phrases in the entire world for this kind of kid is, what is the evidence, right? They bumped their shoe. You're assigning a ton of meaning to it. What's the evidence? Because there likely is no evidence. And I also want to make sure that they understand that just because we read something, and this goes into the how do I keep them who they are, doesn't mean I have to react. It's a choice, right? And that's how we keep them their authentic self and keep them from people pleasing. If we are a person who feels compelled that I must react to everything I notice, that's where we fall into people pleasing, because I'm trying to please that audience who I'm talking to. But if we empower kids with confidence and say, just because this happens doesn't mean we have to react, right? And that's really a life skill too. And I want to have that conversation a lot. I want to talk about it, chat about how they're feeling. And I think the way we keep kids healthy, I don't even talk about fitting in anymore. I want them to belong, right? And part of belonging is reading the room because you know what's going on. But part of belonging is to be your authentic self. And what we want to do is connect so I can show you my authentic self. And so I make choices, right? And sometimes that choice might be, you're not a very nice person to me. And I get that you're mad, but that's you, right? And so especially with kids who have a really good radar, let's talk about it and let's help them lower their anxiety whenever possible and realize what's a me issue and what's a them issue. And that's a quote from one of my clients too. He would always be like, that's a them issue, not a me issue. And I loved it because I was like, oh, it is. Does that help, that. Amanda?
Yeah, I want to add a couple of things.
That's great.
I want to add a couple of things just to tease apart the difference between observing a room, which is being a scientist and noting what you observe, versus mind reading, which is interpreting the observation. So those are two different things. And then also, Caroline, we had a little in our interview pre-chat, we had a conversation about persona, and that the persona I bring when I'm leading a webinar is different from the persona I bring when I'm walking the dog after dinner, you know, versus when I'm, you know, sitting on the couch eating ice cream, watching Anne with an E. So I think everybody gets to choose what persona is appropriate for the time. And does it change who we are? What a great dinner time conversation as a family. I mean, that's a great conversation. Are we changing who we are, or are we choosing a persona for a good fit in this situation? All right, Jen Chase, love to hear from you.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, so you mentioned reading the room, but my daughter would much rather be reading her book. So she brings her books everywhere. She reads at the lunch table. She sits with the same group. She's 13, sits with the same group of girls in seventh grade, but reads during lunch, doesn't go out to recess. Says, Mom, you want me to have friends more than I do. It's not a problem kind of thing. And when I mentioned one girl, she's on the group text chat with all the girls who sit at her lunch table, but she won't even read them. And in terms of, you know, I said, well, would you like me to take two of you out to ice cream? Oh no, like it would be awkward. It would, you know, there's anxiety, and I've unfortunately probably talked to her the wrong way about this. Like I think Caroline mentioned yesterday about, well, they come in the door and we have a problem. And I mean, not that harsh, but like, I'd like you to have friends, and what is it going to take? But now she's, you know, like going to butt heads with me. And even if I talk about reading the room or the social spy thing, she's going to be like, oh, this is another one of Mom trying to get me to have friends.
Okay, I love this kid so much already, and I've worked with this kid so many hundreds of times. So I want to just say this. Nobody is right or wrong in how they talk to their kid. It's just if we tweak our communication style, we get through better, right? You know, it's like when you talk to the school, if you learn a certain language, then you get stuff. If you don't learn that language, you don't get as much. So I always have people prep me. I want to say that some kids don't have a desire, but now that we know that we are at epidemic levels of loneliness and how it helps your health, I kind of feel like it's like veggies, right? And some of our kids have really challenging palates. They would live on, I don't know if any of you resemble this remark, chicken nuggets and French fries, mac and cheese at every meal, right? And we endeavor and we spend hours finding out how to get good stuff in with them. And sometimes the conversation we have to have is, you know, you have a plate with five different things and I need you to eat, you know, these different food groups and this is a must, right? And so I would love her to come around, right? So I want to start with collaborative conversations. I want to hear what makes her feel awkward. I want to know, you know, when she's at that lunch table, like come from curiosity, use your coaching skills. How does she feel? Because if she reveals to you that she feels so awkward and doesn't know what to say, and that's why the book, now we go down the direction of how can I help you feel more confident? How can I help you feel more comfortable in your skin? You know, take her to my YouTube channel, right? Take her to thing, have her watch things, have her talk through, right? Even if she's like, oh, mom, just one of mom's things. If she says, no, I'm perfectly comfortable, I just don't want to talk to anybody, right? That's a different road. Now I'm going to go down the road of let's step into people's shoes, right? And thinking about the fact that relationships are helpful to us. Maybe we pick a character from a book. Anne with an E is one of my all-time favorites. I used to read all the Anne of Green Gables. But there are many characters who have to learn to adapt in order to get what they want. This is my third thing. What does she want, right? And I love to use that and connect it. So really quick story. I had a client who was a brilliant scientist, like brilliant, gonna change the world. But he couldn't get grants and he couldn't get teaching gigs that he stayed in because of his social skills. And so I helped him, we worked together. I figured out what was going on, why he kept having to move university to university. And, you know, even like watched a class and was like, oh, if we say this to people, they feel this way, right? What I do with my little scientist now is I connect that story to this thing that I want you to talk about, right? When you get to be a grown up, you're going to have to go before a grant committee. You are brilliant. You're a wonderful scientist. So whatever it is she wants, I'm going to connect that people have, there's something to do with every single thing we do on the planet. Even, by the way, my mother was a librarian. Even if she becomes a librarian, there's people involved, right? So I use that because it's not like carrot and stick. It's more like interest and passion and the future you. And by the way, it's incremental, these growth steps. So don't be sad if you're getting like a little gains, right? That's okay.
I would like to add something. And then we're going to be out of time. So Marilee, Caitlin, Maria, Denisa, if you guys can join us in the members only chat starting in 5 minutes, Casey will go ahead and private message you the link. I hope you can join us. If you can't join us, go ahead and post it in Facebook and we'll get your questions answered there. Jen, I just want to say I'm a fellow bookworm. And so I really identify with your daughter. So in that quiet moment where you can have a collaborative conversation, the script I would love someone to use with me if I were that age would be, honey, I love that you love to read. And I don't know if you know this, but having at least one friend in a spare is as important as eating vegetables and getting exercise. So how can we find the win-win where you get to enjoy the love of reading and make time for friends? And I will still at this age self-talk to myself like, okay, I can only read my book. Let's say it's a Saturday morning. I really want to hike with my friend, but I'm really into this book. So I can read this book till 9:30, and then I got to meet my friend at the trailhead at 10, and I have a great time on the hike, but it's sort of like I have to self-talk myself out of reading. So it's like you're giving her skills for life to talk about how do we get the win-win with all the things we need to do. All right. Okay, guys, thank you for joining us. We would love you to see the membership today only. You get a copy of Caroline's book. And the link again, Casey, let's put it in the chat one more time. It's brightandquirky.com/friendship-week-ty. And we'll see you in the Idea Lab. And for the folks who we didn't get to answer your questions, come on and join us in the members only coffee, which we're doing after every session today. All right. And Caroline, are we seeing you in the next session or do you need to break off?
No, I can come and I have the link from yesterday.
Perfect. See you soon. All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow or in this next session. Thanks so much.